Leah Goodman, Reel 2.
Yes. So trying to sort of maybe fill in a little bit more of memories in this Yaroshita. There's a market. I remember the market. I remember my father taking me to the market. And ice cream. It's amazing how little details. Ice cream not eaten in the cone, but actually between wafers. And that after that was a very grown up. I mean, my father would have one of those ice creams and I would have a cone one. Poppy seed, it's again something quite extraordinary. You could buy a bunch of dried out poppy seed pods and you made a hole in them and then you shook out the poppy seed right into your mouth. And that is something I remember very well. Looking at today's children going to buy a bunch of poppy seed. Maybe it's still done in Poland today. Now this, cousins of my mother's, who in fact, father, Herman, the cousin living in Germany now, father and my grandfather were brothers. My mother left or ran away from home, or she had an opportunity somehow, she was going to spend a holiday somewhere, and instead of going there, she was only a child, went and actually lived in this Kelsen with her paternal uncle. Because at home there was a stepmother, and the stepmother wasn't always very nice to her. But they were in fact quite poor. There were lots of children. I think there were 7 of them, and they were quite poor. My mother told the story how she stayed up part of the night with her aunt while she was sewing clothes for the children, and sometimes there were not enough. He also was somehow in Jewish hands, his uncle. And how there wasn't always enough food for the Sabbath, and how the neighbors would rally around. So it seems a bit sad to be so poor and still have so many children who probably didn't know much about birth control. The other thing which my mother used to say is how happily married they were. So they must have been particularly love matched, the couple having all these children, and how nice the aunt was to her. And this is something which this cousin Herman, does say that she was, my mother was like a sister to him because she remembers very well how she lived with him. Now I remember near somehow, there must have been near the market, somewhere it's connected with the poppy seed and the ice cream, visiting that family who had left Kelsen. And they were making something which I thought that it was quite incredible, looking back on it as well. They were making bags out of newspapers. So they were folding and gluing bags, like the brown bags you have now, just ordinary small brown bags to put food. They were making bags like that. And I mean, how poor they must have been, actually, and how much money could they have earned out of that. So there were the two brothers out of that family survived.
Did you have to wear any sort of form of identification? You know, one hears of the yellow star that Jewish people...
Yes, I don't think in that small town, the yellow star, the yellow star, I do remember of the yellow star, I will tell you later. But obviously that town, as far as I know, the town was administered by the Jewish community and the Jewish policemen, and the German presence was very little felt. Again, according to my mother, there was enough food as well.
This journey back to Krakow that you
yes.
Remember.
So now the journey back to Krakow, we somehow were separated. I think you had to change. There was a small gauge railway and then you went to bigger gauge railway. And I don't know if the Yaroshita itself had a station or if you had to go by other means of transport to a nearby town. And anyway, but I do remember actually the train, being in the train, and knowing that they were not my parents, so that because it was already dangerous to travel by train. And at that time, my parents must have already had some false identification as aliens, because they had a lady, a Christian lady, whom I was attached to, and then my mother was on her own, and so was my father. And there was a story about change. I wanted something to drink. At the station, maybe the train stopped at the station and there were vendors, and there's a whole story about me going up, or my mother sort of intervening because she was afraid that I would go to her to ask for change. The lady accompanying me didn't have, only had a a big note, and yeah, I was considered a very clever child. So actually on that train, according to my mother too, I was very clever, that my mother sort of was so afraid that I was going to go to them to preempt it, and said, "Oh, this gentleman has some change," and I went and called him not by his real name and not my by father, but gave him some Polish name. And yeah, this is all sort of, again, very, very vague in my memory. Now, what is, I found very important to the development of myself was that I had these X number of years where I was the first grandchild and I was considered as a very clever, I must have had a good memory because I was able to sort of recite, I was quite extroverted, I wasn't shy in any way, and I was able to sort of put a bit of an actor, I was able to perform, stand at a table to recite with admiring grown-ups, and that I do remember, an absolute wunderkind. So having had these years of sort of solid base, of sort of loving, caring family, with no angst, even on the train somehow, it was a train journey, I couldn't imagine somebody was going to come and tear me away. Even so, it was make-believe the woman, maybe I was her child, my parents were not my parents, but that didn't give me any form of anxiety at all.
Now, you seem to have been very secure.
Well, loved and pampered. My parents, obviously, by circumstances of those days, were relatively well off. I was, I think, very nicely dressed. And which is, I think, quite interesting to know, it isn't just when the German marched in that the life as one knew it came to an end, particularly for a child. So if there was angst and anxiety, how to earn a living, and so obviously it did not affect the atmosphere in which I lived.
I was wondering, though, at this age, you're now about 7, aren't you, 35 years?
Probably more like 6, because I left Poland, beginning of 44, we left Poland, and I was then 8.
Did you?
About 6 to 7 years old, yes.
Would you have had any particular feelings about the Germans at that stage, can you remember?
Yes, but I mean, as being sort of like a foreign element, not to be trusted, but very vague. The way one remembers in one's childhood, there was nothing concrete. I don't remember a particular German at a particular time. So somehow, and also it's very difficult to imagine, is it something which I knew afterwards of the fear of the Germans? Which would have tinted that time as well.
Of course, there's perhaps that because there wasn't a lot of talk in front of you, in your family, about the Germans.
No, I'm sure that there would have been, but then maybe what does one remember hearing them talk? So they themselves must have been quite in command of sort of their own destiny at the time, and not, even that evening with the big brouhaha by my mother leaving, which I do remember, was not, obviously I must have been protected because it didn't traumatize me. My mother said that we went actually to a Christian family together. Again, I have no recollection. I don't have a recollection. When we left Jaroszice, that we went to stay for a few days with a Soltysowa. I do remember it was a family called Soltysowa. But I do remember staying there on my own. So we must have, if my parents stayed with me, having left Jaroszice, and we were given shelter in that family, I don't have direct, very vague recollections. I mean, there's nothing particularly concrete. But I do remember arriving in a camp. Now, this camp was called Kostje. Now, my cousin in Germany says that it was run by a man called Strauss. Now, he sounds very much like Schindler. He was not Schindler. So it was a German, my mother's notes that he was a German general, who you actually paid, and that's what my mother's cousin Herman calls it, that it was abort, because the language we have, he lives in Germany, is actually German. Like, German isn't very good, but I mean, this is the language we communicate in. And then it was gekauft, so it was like a board camp, meaning that you actually paid money to get into the camp. So this fellow Strauss, according to my mother, a general, was running, and it was, this camp was in a fortress, and he had adults and children. I think my mother says there were 50 children. Maybe there were, some of them were older children, because I, in fact, was there with my parents, and I do remember the first night arriving in that place, because we slept on the floor, and we woke up in the morning, and we were covered with black, because somehow the edges of the floor we slept on was a black roof of some sort, must have been maybe some sort of protective coating which actually came off. But again, there was no... there was absolutely no angst, as far as I was concerned. You see, no angst whatsoever. It was all sort of going on a journey, and it was fine. Which again must have really said something about my parents, if they were anxious, and I'm sure they were not actually communicating it. They did, or they didn't go into panic station. I must have stayed there for a very short time in that camp, and that this German could not keep children anymore. I mean, that's what I've always knew, that at that time the big thing was that he couldn't keep children anymore, and said that he found a place in an orphanage in the ghetto for his children. You know, the ghetto, I think, was fairly open for quite a long time. So that people lived there, but in fact there were gates, but they were able to leave the ghetto and come back into the ghetto, and this is where the Yellow Star comes into. And I know that my father had like a Mack, and with a big reverse, and La Mica, I think it was a predecessor of plastic, that his Yellow Star was not of what one is normally sees being stitched in cloth, but his actually was Yellow Star, must have been painted on this mica, which he wore as an armband. And so if he didn't want to be known as a Jew anymore, he would push it into the double reverse of that coat. Now, my father was very blonde, and he was actually sort of nearly like an albino, which was quite unusual. I mean, they're blonde on my father's side of the family, but he was particularly blonde. I think we have two pictures. We have two photographs, actually, who survived the war of him. So, I mean, looking at him, I think he's got a fairly Jewish nose and eyes, but the fact that he was so blonde, one just sort of didn't connect. Now, the big change in my life came from the time I left my parents in that camp. So the children were put on a horse-drawn carriage, and I remember that very well. It was, again, going on a journey with my friends. This Kostia was, in fact, the camp just outside, like an outer suburb of Krakow, a bit in the open countryside. So I think there were, and I remember there was sort of grass, and we must, you know, and how we ate, actually, somebody we were trying to recollect, there was a canteen. I think a lot of the cooking probably was done by my mother on her own stove. Small, like a camping gas type of thing. She had, again, with a solid fuel. I mean, the little details like this really impressed you as a child, that you could have fire out of something which looks like a white brick, that would give fire. So we were going on that journey, my friends and I do remember my father actually following that horse-drawn cart with the children sitting on it. He took me off that cart. He took me off that cart, and according to the family saga, he said to whoever else was in charge of that horse-drawn cart with the children in it, that I was going to say goodbye to friends. You see, which obviously then was possible, that I was going to say goodbye to friends, Christian friends living. So one was an outer suburb, and I think where he got me off the cart was in a suburb of Krakow. And I joined this family, childless family called Sotisova, who did business with my parents. These children were killed. None of these children actually survived. there was some raid in the ghetto, and these children were actually killed during that raid. Again, the details I don't know. So the mothers actually, the parents knew that these children were no more. But according to them, I went with the children because nobody had a detail that I in fact had left. Nobody sort of went back to them, as far as I know, to say otherwise. Now, I remember saying again, I was quite a young child, staying without my parents, which would have been the first time. Again, doesn't seem to have given me particular... I'm really not quite normal, particularly anxiety. I was absolutely fine. I mean, they were nice people, and I stayed there for a short time. Now, I left them to go to a sister's of Madame Soltysova, called Dobrovolska. I do remember the name. The family was called Dobrovolska. I stayed there for a while, and that was actually my first knowledge of hunger, having been with her. So my father and mother must have still been in this costume, and I was in that family where there were other Jews harboring. Now, the family Soltysova kept me without money. According to my mother, we stayed there for a short time between Jawashitsa and going into the camp. So there were in fact not enough Christian Poles helping the Jews during the war. There were just not enough of them. But you can't say there were none, because I know of one family who did with no money. The Dobrovolska family kept us for money. So one was jolly glad that there was somebody to keep you, never mind if it was for money, but obviously you have a completely different connotation to it than somebody who would just do it out of humanitarian reasons and open the door. From what I remember, the Soltysova family didn't keep me anymore, but even so they said that I was some relative or child of a relative because they felt somehow threatened, and they were not going to adopt me, obviously, otherwise I could have maybe stayed with them to the end of the war. But I was definitely on my own in this Dobrovolska family, where the housekeeper or the person in charge of housekeeping was a Jewish person. And I think didn't wanted to show how little money she spent on housekeeping. So I think in those days, again, this is something which was told afterwards, I can't tell you, but I remembered from that time, that she wanted to show on what a small budget she could run the family. Now, I remember the flat quite well. The flat was sort of quite a large bourgeois flat with a number of rooms. How many Jews lived there besides me, I can't tell you. There was only, the family had a child my own age. Now, in Jawashitsa, my mother taught me part of the alphabet. Now, you know, Polish is a phonetic language. I, in fact, was able to read. I wasn't going to school. In Poland, you only start school at 7. But there were books, there were children's books in my family, namely belonging to that little girl, who was not a particularly nice, particularly kind little girl. I think she made my life a little bit of a misery at the time, but not to the point of being very unhappy. Even the lack of food, only what I do remember is having this very, very dark black bread and eating the rim of it, and with the jam, I think it was beetroot jam, obviously no butter. And I would eat it round and round, and the nicest bit was in the center where maybe more jam was trapped, leading to the end. Now, I came from a family where you were still questioning, one bite for mother, one bite for father, because in fact there was, one wanted me to eat, and I didn't have always a marvelous appetite. It was quite a slim child. And suddenly there was, and I did visit my parents in Kostya. I do remember visiting them. How I got there, who fetched me, that I just can't tell you. Again, it seems quite extraordinary. How comes that I visited them? Actually, I only thought about it recently. According to my mother, she cried with other mothers because the children were killed. But obviously the children were still alive in the ghetto when I visited. So they must have known that I was, unless they thought that they fetched me from that ghetto orphanage to bring me into the camp to visit And that's, but I definitely remember visiting them, and I remember even what we ate. My mother made, on that little stove, she made fried onions with scrambled eggs. To this day, I think that there's nothing more delicious than, I don't know if you've ever had fried onions with scrambled eggs, but it really is sort of, obviously you fry them, you put a butter the onions, so they have a bit of a butter flavor, and it is absolutely delicious. And what my parents couldn't believe is how I asked, and that was actually spread on bread. I mean, that was served on bread like a sort of open canopy, but the eggs and everything were warm on the bread. Saying that, could I have one more slice? Could I have one more slice? You know, so recollections like that I do have. After my father was arrested, now my father was arrested, there are all these different versions how he was arrested, away from the my father was arrested in this, my mother was in the camp, and my father left the camp. Now, there are different versions on how he was arrested. And but one thing everybody has in common, that is my aunt, my father's sister who survived concentration camp, and my mother, and these notes which my mother left behind, written by a journalist. That it was a German who was off duty, and it was the lunch hour, who saw my father and sort of recognized him as a Jew. And in fact, it would have to be none of his business to arrest him because he was off duty, and he saw it from a balcony, and it was absolutely. So, according to the notes written by the journalist, my father met up a group of workers from the ghetto, and it was his way of actually being able to give them something for relatives which we had in the ghetto. That's something which I've just only learned from the notes. I thought that my father was actually in a group of workers, so I somehow assumed that this group of workers had left this Koschei, and which was actually officially a labor camp with people being employed by that general, Pikes, I think some sort of underwater sewage pipes. I do remember actually in the sort of concrete pipes lying on the ground of this camp. Anyhow, he was for whatever reason with these people, and he went into a shop. According to the notes, my mother, there's no mention of the shop. But my mother, as I grew up, I knew the story from her that my father loved my mother so much, she loved apples, and that shop happened to be open at lunchtime, which shops normally are closed, and selling apples, and my father left the work group, even so somebody in the work group, obviously Christian, said to my father, I can go in to buy whatever for on your behalf. And my father was, so confident, overconfident, went into the shop. Jews were not allowed to go into the shop, and maybe that Mika thing he put into his double sleeve and went into the shop. My aunt, his sister, who survived concentration camp, said, oh, come on, what a story your mother told about the apples. What apples? He didn't go into the shop to buy apples. Your father went in because he was doing business. You know, which is business, meaning buying and selling, buying from A and selling to B. So as we were saying before, who knows what version. The point is, he was arrested and he was put into a prison, and my mother did try to get him out of that by sort of bribing people to try to get him out. A postcard was sent actually, and I think he must have dropped on transit whatever camp he went to. It's possible that either he gave it to a guard to be posted, but we did get one card. According to the cousin Herman, somebody saw somebody being very blonde. So what they did in camps, concentration camps, if somebody came in from another camp, they would ask, did you see in your camp so-and-so, so-and-so, or by the name of so-and-so? So my this cousin Herman would ask, and as my father was so blonde and so unusually looking, according to whoever came from one section of Auschwitz to my cousin's section, said, yes, there's somebody who looks like that, but he's an electrician. you know, as you were in a concentration camp, you picked up some trait or you made yourself to belong to a trait which you never belonged to. Now, my mother never actually did research to really find out, because, I mean, lists were, and one day I will, and we'll go to Israel fairly often to go to Yad Vashem and actually find out if his name ever was on the list. If that person who told my mother's cousin was right, he was in the Agilfarben, which is making paintings, which actually still exists to this day. Which is actually horrible. They didn't even bother after the war to change the names. I think it's quite disgusting to use the slave labor during the war and then still be actually quite a big public company using the same name. I wanted to add a few words about my time in Jaworzyce and what other members of the family I remember. And part of it is some sort of homage to the memory, because they are no more. So my grandfather had a sister, and she, I remember the house. There were a lot of them. I mean, there must have been some grown-up daughters with son-in-laws. Did they come from outlying districts to live there at the time? But it was a very lively sort of household. I remember a man shaving with a razor, which, I mean, obviously my father, I don't know what he shaved with, but that sort of rather impressed me. Now, out of that household, there is a cousin of my mother's who is alive. So he is the son of this sister of my grandfather's, and his name is Abraham Chaba, and he lives, he's a very elderly man now and lives in the States. His granddaughter, as a matter of fact, I'm just visiting at the moment. Now, my mother had three sisters, so next to her was Ismania, who married Herman, her first cousin, and then there was a sister called Esther, whom I remember. She was very short, very wiry, and the story in the family was that step-grandmother used to call her Esther Scheigitz. Scheigitz is a sort of tomboy. Somehow my mother said that this Esther, she could victimize the other, her Manya and my mother, but she couldn't victimize that. Esther must have had quite a strong personality, because the stepmother couldn't touch her. And then there was a sister called Bronya. And Bronya, which is in fact, must have been a Jewish name, must have been Bracha, which is benediction. And she, I understand, became ill. I think she had something like meningitis when she was 5 years old, and then was retarded and had epileptic fits. So that I remember her very well, because she was very proud of me. And I remember actually some of her fits as well. I mean, that was sort of rather impresses you. Now, the step-grandmother was a divorced woman with no children, who then had a child with my grandfather. So there was a brother, a half-brother of my mother's, called Jakub. And Jakub, in fact, was born in 1926, which is quite extraordinary, because my husband was born in 1923. So I did have quite young parents, and this Jakub, in fact, survived the war and concentration camp, and then died. He actually, in fact, committed suicide in Israel. I mean, my poor mother, it's, you know, bad enough for me hearing the news, but for her it was absolutely devastating. I think he must have, was involved in an accident, a war accident, and was injured, and then actually shot himself. He felt that he was, you know, partly crippled. In fact, I mean, when you look back on it, it's quite courageous. He just didn't want to accept life being sort of physically diminished, and being such a young boy and surviving concentration camp, who knows how that affected him as well. My half-sister was born in 1948, and I think he committed suicide in 1948 as well. So that was Jakub. So we're back now to
the effects of your father's arrest, I think, now we'll go into.
Well, the